This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going
to
have an effect for generations to come.
For decades, bars and clubs specifically for the LGBTQ plus community have been a safe space for those who are figuring out who they are, trying to make friends. But where do you go when the queer spaces in your town or city shut down? Because that has been happening across Australia for a little while now. How important are queer spaces? Do we still need them as much as we used to? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're going to get into this and find out what these places mean to you.
Isn't just about having somewhere to drink and listen to gay music, but it's actually about having a space where people can truly express themselves as they are.
Yeah, I want to hear from you on this as well. If you've got big thoughts, please send them through, message in. That is coming up very soon. First, though, a little bit of politics for ya.
This is Hack.
The Coalition embroiled in yet another round of internal turmoil after the Nationals met to formally dump their support of reaching net zero by 2050.
On Triple J.
Yeah, the National Party is done with net zero. It's been officially dropped as a policy after weeks of speculation and a defection. You might remember Barnaby Joyce walking out over the Coalition's climate policy. So what does this mean for the Liberals? This relationship has been rocky all year, so could this be the end of the Nationals and the Liberals in partnership once and for all? Well, in a sec, we're going to speak with National Senator Bridget McKenzie, but first, political reporter Shalila Medora explains how we got here.
4 years is nearly an eternity in politics.
Do you want to break into song?
In October 2021, the National Party officially said it would support the goal of reaching net zero emissions by 2050. The leader of the Nats at the time was Barnaby Joyce.
I stand 100% behind the decision of my party room that we go forward with a 2050 zero emission goal.
Fast forward to now, and the Coalition is no longer in government. Barnaby Joyce got demoted after the last election and has now quit the Nats altogether.
It's healthier for all if it's not working well to get out of it.
Yesterday, the Nats unanimously agreed in a party room meeting to drop its support for net zero after grassroots members did the same thing.
Regional Australia is being torn apart, and what we're saying is let's do this in a fairer way.
Order of the day number one, repeal net zero bill 2025. Resumption of debate on second reading.
The move by the Nats has reopened debate over climate change policy in Australia, with the Nats saying they're acting in the interest of their communities by opposing net zero.
Mr. Speaker, thousands of jobs have been lost across my electorate. The safeguard mechanism will single-handedly destroy even more productive industries between now and 2030.
And Labor saying net zero is in the best interests of the country.
Because net zero is not about shutting up shop. It's about running mines, keeping people in work and reaching net zero through offsets and better technology.
All of this puts pressure on the Liberal Party to explain where it stands on net zero. Opposition leader Susan Lee must now explain if the Libs will follow the Nats or go their own way.
They're entitled as their own party to arrive at their own position, and David Littleproud made that clear yesterday.
If you're wondering what the Liberals' climate change policy actually is, well, you're not alone. All policies are currently under review after the Coalition's thumping at the last election.
I'm looking forward to the work that will happen between now and the Liberal Party's position becoming known, and then us sitting down together as two mature parties.
The thing is, the stakes are actually higher now than at the last election. Support for the Coalition has slumped to an all-time low in the latest news poll. Shadow Communication Minister Melissa McIntosh got asked about it point blank on Sky News this morning.
Let's get right to it. How terminal is this decline in your view?
I hope there's a cure for what you're saying is terminal, but it's pretty hard to wake up on a Monday morning with such terrible results in polling. And it's days like this you think, well, why am I doing this job? And I think the answer is in our communities.
The Coalition's already split once this year, briefly breaking up for a week back in May because the Libs and the Nats didn't see eye to eye on a few issues. So are they heading for a messy divorce? Shadow Energy Minister Dan Tehan doesn't think so.
obviously there's some noise here and noise there, but yeah, the way we have been working constructively together, I'm very confident that we'll be able to reach a position which means we can all continue to work together in the best interests of the nation.
While the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has used the discord in the coalition to blame them for the rising cost of electricity.
Power prices is a product in part of the dysfunction and chaos that's been there of the coalition. They had no plan to do anything other than fight each other, and that's continuing today.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Medora reporting there. Look, there's a lot of reaction coming through on this. Adam on the text line says the youth vote has just left the chat. James says, once again, I feel like the coalition has opted out of a position rather than developing any policy. Look, let's get into this chat a little more now with National Senator Bridget McKenzie, who joins us from Parliament House. Senator, thank you very much for coming on.
Great to be back on Hack.
It's good to have you. I mean, we're hearing a lot from our listeners at the moment. Mm. I mean, on Hack's Instagram as well, we've got a few comments. A bit confused. People saying, well, one person here says, well, they just blew their chances of increasing their foothold. Another person says, this is how to make your party irrelevant in one easy step. I mean, my question to you is, are the Nationals being deliberately obstructive by abandoning this commitment to net zero?
No, because lowering emissions is a non-negotiable for the National Party, and that is something we need to say over and over again, because we want to see a lower emissions future for our country and for the globe. But equally, we think it needs to be a burden that's shared fairly here at home domestically, but also on the global stage. And right now, that's not happening. So we want to, getting out of net zero by 2050 is a recognition that the 2030 targets won't be met under Labor, the 2035 targets won't be met under Labor. There's just a report out this week looking internationally. Not one of the G7 countries is meeting their targets. So let's get serious about lowering emissions in a way that doesn't trash our environment or our economy and doesn't divide communities.
I mean, the experts have been pretty clear on this. Some that I was speaking to today said the reason we're maybe not seeing those targets being met, or we're not seeing the emission cuts as great as we'd like to at this time, is because we're not building up renewables fast enough to be seeing the reductions we need. We actually need to be more ambitious. What do you say to that?
What we've seen is an increase in energy prices close to 40%. Now, if you're not paying energy bills, you don't notice that. But what you have noticed is every time you go to the checkout, it costs more than it should. Every time you buy something that's made here at home in Australia, the price has gone up. So the whole energy price increase has impacted our entire economy for consumers, for your listeners, when they purchase daily goods, plus their energy bill. And what we've also been seeing, and more recently in these last few months, is our heavy industrial base employing thousands and thousands of Australians across this country can't afford to operate. So you've seen Tomago last week, Whyalla, Bell Bay is run on hydropower. Bell Bay aluminium smelter down in Tassie is under serious pressure because of Labor's policy. So we think there's a better way to have a cheaper, better and fairer energy system that we can lower emissions around.
Senator, can I take you to some of your own words from a few years ago? You said in 2021, we are backing net zero by 2050 because it is the right policy for Australia and because the plan is right for the regions. And then you went on to say, I do not accept that we need to harm our standard of living or our way of life in order to get a lower emissions economy or destroy our regional export industries to achieve it. What has changed?
Well, that reality under the Labor Party's plan hasn't been realised. What we've seen over recent years is manufacturers moving offshore, heavy industrial sector shedding jobs, people under pressure within their own households around energy bills, and the globe realising that these aggressive emissions targets can't be met without harming humanity. And so there needs to be a way that we lower emissions without trashing our economy, the environment, but and dividing communities.
Do you understand why some Australians might be sceptical, though, that your opinion has changed at a time when the Coalition's not doing too well in the polling? Support for the Coalition's crashed to a record low 24%. Support for Pauline Hanson's One Nation is growing. Do you understand why some Australians might think this is just about politics?
Yeah, I think that's a really cynical way to approach it. I'd ask any of your listeners who want to understand the evidence base that the National Party made this decision on. I would recommend contacting my office. We had a piece of work done by the Page Research Centre, which goes into the impact of the Labor Party's net zero strategy and highlighting that it's actually failed. It's not doing what it is meant to do. So we've spent $9 billion this year and haven't lowered emissions. So we are literally feeding our own taxpayer dollars to foreign-owned companies for a strategy that's failing. We're trying to do what the rest of the world hasn't done, which is a 100% renewable approach.
We've got a message here from Mel from Albury who says, so because no one's meeting the targets internationally, the solution is to cross our arms and sook like a child. Sounds like bullcrap to me, is Mel's message there. What do you say to her?
Well, thanks, Mel. It's not bull crap at all. It's based on researched evidence that we believe we can have a better, cheaper and fairer system. Just down the road from where Mel lives in Albury is a little town called Deterang, which is going to have a massive lithium battery literally butting up against the state forest there, being a fire hazard. Hundreds of community members saying, please don't do this. We say no. And yet the state Labor government in Victoria has overruled their private property rights and is putting that battery there. So at every kind of juncture, it's not just community unrest. The heavy industrial sector, as I said, is shedding jobs. So at some point you've got to say, of course we need to save the planet. Of course we need to lower emissions. But if China, India, the US, Europe are all walking back their commitments, if they've made them at all. At some point we have to say, we do our fair share, but why we need to do our fair share.
Senator, China has spent 10 times more on clean energy than either the United States or Europe over the past 5 years. So,
and how much have their emissions reduced?
And people are saying,
it's a genuine question.
Analysts are saying they are leading the way in terms of transition. There's also analysts out there who are saying billions of dollars has been committed to reducing emissions, but not all of it has been spent as well. I'm just trying to provide other takes that are coming through, because obviously this is something that is really important to people. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with National Senator Bridget McKenzie about the National's decision to abandon this net zero commitment. Senator, is the Liberal National Coalition sustainable if you're unable to agree on this massive issue?
Well, as I outlined, Dave, we, after the election, commissioned a serious piece of work to be done by the Page Research Centre around our approach to tackling climate change. They've given us that work and we have made a decision around net zero.
So
we are not walking
away
from the Paris Agreement. Well, that at the end of the day, the Liberal Party are going through their own process. I'm not going to commentate on that. My job's to stand up for the people that we represent to make sure we have a safe and secure and prosperous future
out
in the regions.
So is Susan Lee the best leader for the Coalition then? You must have an opinion on that.
I don't get a say in that. No, we don't get a say in the Nats.
Are you confident with Susan Lee as the leader of the Coalition at a time when you are losing support? Do you feel confident as a member of the Coalition having her as your leader?
Well, Dave, Susan is the leader. It's not my first rodeo here. I've been in Parliament a long time. I don't commentate on the Liberal Party's leadership. That is a matter for their party. Susan Lee is the leader of the opposition, and she's working very, very hard to re-engage after a catastrophic loss at the last election, to re-engage with communities around the coalition's policies and our proposition going forward. I'm a leader in the National Party. We represent a specific constituency in the Australian political spectrum. We've been around for 100 years. We've made a decision that is in the best interests, we believe, of our people, our industries and our nation, because the facts are undeniable. There is a way to lower emissions, do our fair share, which we absolutely should do, to address climate change, that is responsible, not reckless.
Are you worried you're going to lose the support of young voters, though? Because a lot of them are hitting us up right now saying we do not agree with this, including people in your own electorate, in Nationals' heartland.
Well, I think it's up to us as a party to demonstrate to young people who care about action on climate change that we're serious about action on climate change. Mm-hmm. We are just not committed to targets that are trashing our economy and our environment on the way through and driving up prices.
All right, National Senator Bridget McKenzie, really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us. Thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Always, mate.
And we've got some messages coming through. Jackson in Ballarat says, the Nats pretends that they speak for regional Australia, but they don't. I'm a farmer and our vineyards are already being affected by climate change. We're cutting energy costs on our own farm by investing in renewables and cutting fuel costs. Another one says, why chase net zero when we only emit 1% of the world emissions? Emissions reduction should be in line with other OECD countries. Someone supporting the Nationals move there. And then Jack says, how can you say net zero is bad for humanity if we don't actively work to improve our renewable energies? There won't be any humanity. Look, let's get another take on all of this from someone in rural Australia. And Jake Chandler is a farmer in New South Wales. He's in the Riverina electorate, which is Nationals' heartland. Jake, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Dave. It's an honour.
How do you feel about the Nationals abandoning the net zero emissions target?
Dave, it's pretty disheartening, you know, as the next generation with a big future in front of me, and I try to remain optimistic about our future. You know, what a disappointing thing that the leaders of our country are failing to take action and make a commitment towards what our future looks like.
Do you think a lot of younger farmers would agree with you? Like, you're obviously chatting with a bunch of farmers and people in your community.
Yeah, mate, there's obviously a lot of diversity within agriculture, and that's the best part about us. We're a pretty colourful bunch. But, you know, the big corporations are talking about it. A lot of our supply chains are talking about carbon accounting. And a lot of other countries around the world are talking about it, Dave. So to refuse or to walk away from even a target, you know, it's not even policy yet, I think a lot of my fellow colleagues would be pretty disappointed. But, yeah, I personally, you know, just completely gutted to think that two of the biggest things we can't control as farmers are markets and our climate, and we rely on our brothers in governance to do that for us a bit, and they're not even going to sit at the table.
We've been hearing from National Senator Bridget McKenzie, who's saying it is those in the regions who are going to pay the price for emissions reduction targets. And her argument is that the targets are really aimed towards voters in the cities, that people in the country don't really want this, that they'll be the ones paying the cost because of falling property prices, broken bonds within their communities and families. What do you make of that argument?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it, Dave? You know, there's a classic saying, which I feel to be true at the moment, that the farmer pays retail, sells wholesale and cops the freight bill both ways. But at some point, if we're not having a conversation about carbon and the cost of the environment in producing our food systems, what are we going to talk about? You know, we can't hang our hat on carbon, but it's certainly a good place to start. And it's going to be a bit ugly until we walk forward, because innovation's not a straight line. But let's start there and start having a conversation about producing food in a healthy environment. And I just wonder if that's a really nice disguise or distraction even from maybe trying to look at towards the voters where there's no change is a good thing at the moment. You know, we're all in a cost of living crisis and it's tough for the everyday Aussie right now, and we're feeling that. I wonder if by just coming out with this big statement that we're going to do nothing and we're going to keep the status quo, because inaction is accepting that what we're doing right now is good enough, whether maybe they're leaning towards trying to attract some votes for people that are doing it tough and just don't have the headspace at the moment to deal with any change.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Jake Chandler, a farmer in rural New South Wales, and we're talking about his reaction to the Nationals' decision to abandon its commitment to the net zero emissions target. Jake, as someone who is taking the mantle, like a lot of young farmers out there who are maybe taking over family properties or really diving into this for the first time, how are you feeling about the decades ahead? Like, are you often like wondering and worrying about climate change and the impact it's going to have on your work in the decades moving forward?
Yeah, Dave, it's scary, mate, to think we're taking on a multi-million dollar asset in a farm, you know, the land value, but we're running a cash flow turnover business, you know, accepting usually sort of an award wage, if you like. So the two are quite disproportionate or disassociated. You know, we have an opportunity here we could sell our land and cash out. And as a family farmer, that would break my heart. But economically, as a business, that is an option for us. But we're here for the long term, Dave. And all we're asking for is a bit of leadership and some hope and guidance in our markets and our policymakers to give us a way forward so that we can really live a bright future, see the wildlife return to our land, some beautiful water return and high quality water flowing through our landscape, that we can pass that on to our kids and even our grandkids and really honour those forefathers that came before us and even the Indigenous farmers before them the last 60,000 years. What becomes possible if we can make a step towards a future where we've got another 60,000 years of farming in front of us, Dave? We think about that almost every day we get out of bed.
And just finally, Jake, I mean, have you got any message for those politicians in Canberra who are battling it out and arguing over policy platforms and emissions targets? What would you like them to know?
The only difference between success and failure is the ability to take action. All we're asking for is leadership. We're not asking for perfection. I believe my generation just wants to see things happen. We're accepting that it might be imperfect and might take a little while to tweak it and make it an effective way forward, but please keep taking steps forward.
To confirm, Jake, you've got no political affiliations, right?
No, mate, never. I'm literally politically ignorant other than my own opinions.
Well, it sounds like you could run for politics, Jake, so maybe you'll give it a go one day. Maybe you'll get some support after this interview.
Yeah, mate, we might get there. I wonder what's the opportunity to influence the mongrels from outside the sphere and where I can take leadership to keep bashing them from the side of their forehead, because I couldn't be one of them. God, they do it tough.
Well, look, thank you very much for having a chat with us, Farmer Jake Chandler. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Dave. It's been great to chat.
And we've got a lot of messages still coming through. Someone says, if the Coalition did anything on energy policy when in power for 9 years, we could have been much further ahead with cheaper power now. And someone else says, good on Jake. Many farmers have their head in the sand on climate issues. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack. We miss having that place that's there every weekend to go to because we can't do Peachy that often.
On Triple J.
Look, going out to a pub or a club when you turn 18 is a rite of passage for lots of people. But for many in the LGBTQIA+ community, it doesn't always feel safe. You're about to hear a pretty horrific story from someone who was targeted on a night out in Canberra because of his sexuality, and he's pretty worried that safe queer venues are becoming harder to find. Lillian Rangia has been looking into it.
There's just something about queer spaces where you can really just be yourself.
It's a sweaty night building up to Darwin's wet season, and Peachy, one of the city's last queer parties, is in full swing.
It just feels like it's a really tight-knit community, and it feels like a really welcoming space.
I can be with the people that mean so much to me, and it's always such a special moment.
The nights come when there's not enough venues.
Peachy is the brainchild of Mads McIntyre and their business partner, Chloe. When Mads moved to Darwin, they were shocked to find out there was only one club specifically set up for LGBTQIA+ people. So they set out to change that.
It's all local performers often at Peachy's and local DJs, local queer community. It's a community event. That's why it's so beautiful.
Darwin's queer community is really tight-knit. LGBTQIA+ DJs and famous queer icons like Tiwi sister girl Crystal Love have long carved out space in the city's nightlife and performance culture. But in 2023, Darwin's only dedicated queer club, Throb, closed. And now one of the only occasions they can party and perform locally is when Peachy rolls around.
Nights like this are lovely, but it'd be so much nicer if there was spaces for people to any time of the week just fully be themselves, fully express themselves.
Darwin isn't the only place where queer venues are closing. Just last month, Redfern in Sydney hosted an unconventional funeral parade to say goodbye to the bearded tit.
So farewell, dear tit. Your passing has not been with a whimper but a glorious gangbang.
Hobart's only queer club closed in 2020, and Canberra's only LGBTQIA plus club, Cube, is also set to close at the end of the year.
I have been catcalled many a time when I've gone out. My trans friends have been catcalled.
Jaden is pretty anxious about Cube closing. In fact, he's pretty anxious going out in general these days because of a run-in he had at a different club earlier in the year.
I was out with some friends and we'd gone to one really popular venue. There was one particular man there who was around 40 in age, and then he began to start calling us homophobic slurs and other kinds of derogatory language.
The man spotted him again at a different club later in the evening, and he actually tried to punch Jaden in the head,
which I was able to dodge, and then he took a second swing and he actually struck me on the temple. And I remember being like a bit dizzy, having to hold myself up on the staircase.
Jaden reported it to the police the next day, but the guy who did it was never found. He reckons this would never happen at Cube.
If we don't have any queer spaces where we can feel like we will be protected and we will feel safe, it's just harder to go out. I have plenty of friends, including myself, who feel far less inclined to go out now in Canberra because it just doesn't feel as though I will be able to guarantee a safe night for myself.
Hack on Triple Jack.
Lillian Rangia reporting there, and we've got some messages coming through. Sam in Hobart says, there's no permanent dedicated gay bar left in Hobart. I stopped going out at all because I felt like I was the odd one out. I barely cross paths with another queer person. That's interesting. I want to talk with someone now who is actually based in Hobart. Jack O'Toole is a DJ and queer club night producer. Jack, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
How important are queer spaces? Like, if you think back to when you were first going out, were they really important to you?
When I was first going out, 18, because I was from Brisbane, the big town kind of thing, it was really, really important. Get to go step out of my boundaries and experience people that I wouldn't normally cross with. And it was very, very much of a pivotal part of my journey, really.
And then you moved to Hobart when you were about 21, and a lot of people on the text line now from Tassie are talking about Flamingos closing. Was it still open when you first moved, and what kind of environment was it there?
Yeah, well, 10 years ago, I believe I moved here. Yeah, I think 10 years. It was still operating, and it was very much a place that at the time was like a big community focus, felt like a good little family. And it was really, really important, especially for me at 21, just being able to go into much smaller community and experience a bit more of a personal relationship with people rather than kind of this like anonymity experience that like the big mainland cities experience.
I mean, some people, Jack, might be thinking, well, look, times have changed. There's a lot more acceptance in the community than there was decades ago. Do we still need these specific spaces? What do you say to that?
I think there's a balance that needs to be struck between those. So ever since the closing of Flamingos, the gap and the missing kind of pillar of Hobart's queer nightlife was missing, but it kind of forced our hand to like take up other spaces that other bars are for what the normies or the straighties or whatever we want to call them. But it kind of led to us like with our friend groups or whatnot, just taking up spaces and really settling in there. And then in turn, it kind of meant that our spaces that we're in, they became a little bit safer for us progressively. So now we've got multiple venues in Hobart that actually do really, really well at upholding the safety for queer people, from my experience anyway.
No, it's a fair point, and people are saying this on the text line now, Jack, that, it's been really sad to lose a lot of queer spaces. At the same time, things adapt, and there are still spaces. They're just maybe in different locations. But the one thing that people are resoundingly saying is that we do need specific areas where people do feel safe and do feel comfortable going out. Hey, thank you so much for having a chat with us. Jack O'Toole, appreciate you coming on Hack.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And that is all we've got time for on Hack for now.
Hack.